Hi, I'm Danny Elfman.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Debbie Harry.
This is Chris Steyer Blondie.
This is Ronan Dorzabal from Tears for Fears.
This is Billy Idol.
This is Alex Ebert, a.k.a. Edward Sharp, giving the story behind the song.
Hi, this is Peter Chotti, host of The Story Behind the Song. Each month I speak to some of music's biggest artists to get the inside stories behind their most lasting and iconic songs. Join me for new episodes on the third Monday of every month on The Story Behind the Song from the Consequence Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
The kids on Elm Street don't know it yet, but something is coming to get them.
There's something out there, isn't there?
Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Was locked in a room with a girl who went in alive and came out in a rubber bag.
From the Consequence Podcast Network, the minds behind The Losers Club, comes a new podcast in fantasy terror.
Nancy, there's something wrong with you. You're imagining things.
Halloweenies, a Freddy Krueger podcast.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hello to all of you beautiful pod people out there. I am your host, Leo Phillips, and you've tuned in to This Must Be The Gig. It's your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week, in this podcast, we bring you a little fascinating conversation from the beating heart of the live music and performance scene. And that could really mean chatting to a musician, dip diving into a festival founder's head. That sounds very gross. A choreographer, a comedian, chatting to an actor, really anyone obsessed with performance in the way that we are. So before we dig into this week's fantastic interview, let's check in with our constant companion here, our Madrid traveling, engineering, producer, TMBTG Studios. I'm just saying words. Hello, Adam.
Hi, hey. You are right, Madrid traveling.
How was that?
You are absolutely right. I went to Madrid, Spain.
Yeah, how was that? It's one of your favorite
places
on the earth.
Let's catch up all of the audiences.
So, on a scale of 1 to vermouth drunk.
Yes.
How was it?
It was vermouth drunk 50.
Cool.
Yeah, that's like 150 on a scale of 9.
Great.
No, I love...
We do
I love Spain.
In this world.
I love Spain. I love Madrid specifically.
Why?
I will tell you that I can just sit at a bar and eat olives and drink vermouth all day, and I'm considered normal, which mm-hmm. is like my dream come true. That's all I want in life.
I mean, you can do that here. No one is
but
really
nobody
stopping
would call me normal here.
They would call you stuff.
They would call me
they
stuff,
would still
that's
call
for sure.
You. Call me by my normal.
And I love the vibe. I love that I can test my rudimentary Spanish. And, mm-hmm. it, you know, sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not. But then I also got to go to the incredible Mad Cool Festival.
Yes, for the podcast, which everybody will be able to listen to all those episodes coming up.
Yeah, this is a sneak peek. We had an incredible lineup at the festival. There was Sharon Van Etten, The National, Smashing Pumpkins, Robin, Prophets of Rage, Vetusta Morla, Hometown Heroes. You have to check them out if you haven't already. They're fantastic.
You have a chat with them coming up too.
That's one of
not
the,
in this episode, but next
that's
week.
One of the 7 interviews I completed Bullsies. While at the festival, and those are going to be spread out
you
into
like
a couple
Tasmanian
of,
devil of podcasting.
It's true.
The Madrid vermouth slinging virtuoso
someone
of podcasting.
Someone out there, please do a fan drawing of what I would look like as a
Tasmanian
Spanish
devil.
Vermouth slinging Tasmanian devil. I would love that.
Great.
But we've got 7 interviews spread across, we're thinking 2 episodes in the near future, so get ready for that. But we have an interview this week before that, so
which
let's not get ahead
important.
Of ourselves.
Yes.
Much
but
more even
important.
Before
also,
that.
Also, I like speaking over you.
You love it. But you love even more than that when we hear from our listeners.
Woo-hoo!
So if you're one of those listeners out there, you want to let us know your feelings. Maybe you went to Mad Cool. Tell us what you thought of it. Hit us up at TMBTGpod or at Lior Phillips on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Follow along, let us know what your thoughts are, and we'll love to chat with you.
I think the biggest thing that I've had is people instant DMing me. Is that a thing? Instant
That's a
DMing?
Thing, yeah.
Anyway, I've had them DMing me a lot about how it's certain parts of the show resonated with people and how, you know, they just love the bands that we're showcasing and the guests and the things that we chat about with the guests. And the thing is, if you just tell me, who can I tell? You know, now I'm telling, now I'm reversing that and coming back to you and saying it out loud. So please don't DM me about it. Tell the world. It's like things shouldn't be so private, you know, less of storytelling in private and thought leaders, more of collaboration.
And you know
one way
to get all that done.
This episode is great.
The way to get all that done is by leaving it as a 5-star review.
I mean, that is the goal.
You should do that on Apple Podcasts.
But they can still email and they can still reach
out.
You can still DM.
Do it as well. That's my story for today.
Okay.
Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Absolutely.
RSS us.
Yes. If you leave one of those 5-star reviews, we will give you a shout out on the show, which we do each and every week. We give someone a shout out. This week it goes to Liv, who had this note.
Okay.
Maybe it's Liv Tyler. I don't know.
It's definitely Liv Tyler.
Love this podcast. Mm-hmm. Lior is a brilliant interviewer. Excited to hear more.
Definitely Liv Tyler.
Sweet and direct.
Come on.
Liv Tyler, thank you. Wonderful words. Thank you.
This is the most awkward part of the podcast always, but
we thank Liv Tyler.
Thank you, Liv Tyler. I appreciate your tartan skirts. But let's get... That was a 90s throwback. But let's get into this week's episode, shall we? This week, I'm joined by 3 very special guests. The mighty and melodious trio called Potty Mouth. We've got Ali, Abby, Victoria. And just a little bit of background, if you haven't heard about this wonderful band, they are LA via Boston musicians who have just released their superb sophomore record, Snafu. But more importantly, they're right in the heart of their tour through October, I think it is.
Yep,
yes.
Yep, exactly.
October. So they have this kind of indie punk, hook heavy, heart thumping sound. And I guess in this chat, it kind of all comes together because I talked to them about their cross-country move, our shared love of the B-52s, which everybody knows are the best, and the origins of the new album and much, much more. Go listen to the album after we chat because you have to stay tuned. Let us not be delayed. This is me, Ali, Abby, and Victoria. A triple whammy. Enjoy!
Hi, this is Abby.
Hi, Abby. I feel like this is going to be potentially tricky, but like, I feel like we could do it. You know? I feel like we could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want us to say our names every single time, or do you think after a little while, our different voices?
No, I mean, let's introduce you guys, and then after that, we could just, you know, trust that the listener will know who's talking, really. I think that it's, you know, it's not that hard.
Yeah, and I think we all have pretty different voices, so I think you'll pick up on it.
Do you want to all introduce yourselves and then we can go from there?
Yeah, sure. Do you want us to say what instruments we play?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, cool. So this is Abby. I sing and play guitar.
This is Victoria. I play the drums.
And this is Allie. I play bass.
Amazing. Guys, that was so great. I feel like we should also have like some sort of, I wish if we were in person, we would have like a dance move that we could attach to like introducing yourself with the instrument that you play and your name. I mean, just picture me doing
it. Get a little name tag.
This is the best thing ever because I was so worried that we wouldn't make this happen. and I'm so glad to talk to all of you.
If you want
to
make it happen.
Yeah, I'm so glad to talk to all of you. So now you're in LA. Is that where everybody is based? Or is that just for press and tour and stuff?
So this is Abby. We all live here. We moved here about almost 3 years ago from Massachusetts, which is where we started as a band. And that's where I grew up.
I'm now in Chicago and I'm experiencing sun for the first time in like a year.
Hell yeah.
How does it feel to relocate? Like moving is such a strange concept that I feel like people don't give any agency towards that. So how has it felt to move across the country?
It was definitely scary, but moving to LA, I feel like moving to LA from the East Coast isn't a pretty easy transition just because it's so beautiful here all the time and it's so exciting. It's like you see TV shows being filmed on your street and you're like, oh my God, like this, we're actually here in LA. And yeah, so it just felt like really exciting and we did it for the band and so many good things have come from it. And so we were really lucky that we moved out here together and like had a support system already out here. But moving is terrifying. Allie, I know you had like a way more of a transition than I did for moving.
Oh yeah, this is Allie. Well, the move in general was interesting because it happened right after we finished a full U.S. tour. So we had been on tour for like 5 weeks all over the country. And then we were back in Massachusetts for like a week. And that was the week we all like packed our stuff. And then we played two sold out shows with churches in Boston. Wow. I'll never forget it. At first we were like, okay, we're going to move June 1st. And then we got asked to play these shows like second and third or something like that. So we're like, okay, I guess we can like delay our move by a couple of days to play these shows with churches. But we literally like had the van all packed and everything, like played these shows with churches and then just started driving cross country again, like right after we had basically gotten off tour, which was totally wild. But it was also a different experience because we got to do things that we don't normally get to do on tour, like sightseeing. So we went to the Grand Canyon. That was amazing. We really wanted to try and do stuff like that because, when you're on tour, you're on a schedule and you just don't really have time to do those kinds of things.
And also, I suppose, seeing a sight whilst you're doing something so creatively fulfilling, like touring, if you're a band who enjoys it, at least I feel like there's such a, you know, it gives that sight that you're seeing, it gives it so much more meaning. You know, I always find like when I'm traveling for work and I'm like so stressed out and thinking about everything that I need to do and forgetting everything that I need to do because I feel like my brain is like I'm 85 years old in my brain. And then seeing, you know, traveling and seeing these beautiful things that you've never seen before, like newness is such a wonderful thing. You know, it can be such a good escape.
I love that aspect of touring and traveling in general. One of my favorite websites is Atlas Obscura.
Oh my God, I love that website.
So like wherever you are, you can like set it to your current location and it just shows you all like the really weird, maybe overlooked like attractions around you, like just like cool cultural like historical icon or whatever, you know, things with historical and cultural significance to that place. So we did something kind of cool recently. We were like in Arizona, and we found this, what was it? Like these, those domes in the desert in Arizona. Right. The abandoned, they were these dome like structures that were used to manufacture some of the very first computers in the 80s.
Oh my God.
And now they're abandoned and like hollowed out. Yeah. They look like spaceships. They're really weird. Highly recommended. Yeah.
But do you feel like there was a misconception about touring before you all started? Because of course, you know, you're always, there's so much, so many people have written about you in a certain way. And I feel like so many people write about up and coming or rising bands, which I don't even know what that really means sometimes. Cause you know, to what extent are they up and coming, you know, cause they could be huge somewhere else. So where are they rising, you know? And I feel like, is there some sort of misconception that you all have felt about touring that you really just didn't come true after experiencing that world?
This is Abby. I think that maybe there's a general misconception about touring, that touring is all about partying and like going crazy on the road and after the show every night. And for us, at least, I know some bands do that, but for us, we are so just conscious of what everyone needs, and we all need our rest and to take care of ourselves in order to perform well. And so that is like a huge part of touring that I think people don't understand, is like it's really hard to get enough rest, to eat well, and like do those things that make it so that you're in the kind of physical shape to put on a show.
So where did you learn that all from? Like maybe each one of you, where did you learn to respect yourselves as much as you knew that you needed to on tour? Like how much, you know, like where did you get that insight from? Or was it just really trial and error of, you know, just going out and performing?
I would say to like just go off one of the songs on our new record, 22, like none of us are 22 anymore. Like you can't act like a 22-year-old forever, because your body just changes as you get older. I really think that in the past, like I was able to maybe like function on less sleep while on tour, or like, or function hungover. And I just can't do it anymore. It doesn't feel good. It makes playing harder. It makes the experience of being in a van all day like that much worse. You know, it's like, I think at a certain point, you know, we learn that we have to take care of ourselves, but also take this work seriously, because this isn't just a hobby anymore. It's like something we want to make our profession, our career. You know, it's not work. It's not an excuse to party all the time.
Yeah, I feel like partying and that kind of old story is really just, it's kind of living its days out. You know, I feel like fans expect a band to be like crazy and, you know, like drunk all the time and partying. And the truth is that most bands now know that stripping that away and really focusing on the work. And I love what you said about creating, making sure that it's your job. You have to be professional, and taking things seriously. It doesn't mean drinking, doesn't mean that you're not going to have fun. You know, like I haven't drank in 7 years, and I can tell you I've had a lot of fun in my life. You know, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's certainly, and not to say that you can't drink, but I definitely think that learning at a very young age what, like how to be professional is so hard. And the fact that like you are all aware of that is quite amazing, you know?
Yeah. And I think we all just have a standard of performance for ourselves where we know what a good show is for us, and we can't do that if we're sloppy. And I feel like that's something that people do actually ask me a fair amount, is like, how much do you drink before you go on?
Or
like, do you do drugs before you play shows? Like, how are you able to have so much energy? And I'm like, I'm completely sober right now.
Hydration and water.
Yeah, it's just that sometimes I will have maybe a drink before we play, but sure. I just know myself and know that I want to be fully aware and like know what I'm doing when I'm playing. And yeah, that's just my way of doing it.
I also think that there's like some, it's, I'm not talking about like social media, but there's also something in the way that you are a band that I suppose formed and then you got so much attention so quickly, and it's still, you know, everybody else's perception of you, and almost like getting drunk all the time and or like living out this fantasy that men or, you know, whoever have about, you know, women yeah. in music. It's just, I feel like it's so boring. You know, there's not much essence. Like you can't take much from there. Like how do you grow and how do you learn? Like why can't we have a chat about like going on stage and like really understanding what you're playing, how people are reacting, you know, and being wide mm-hmm. awake is really important. And but I obviously don't want, you know, I don't want to say that you can't, like, do drugs and have a drink.
No, I mean, if anything, I think it's impressive when people are able to perform when they're fucked
up.
I'm like, how are you doing this right now? That's, like, a whole other kind of skill.
I know. That you have to have. Totally.
But I just know myself and know that I would be a total mess if I did something like that.
Do you feel like when you all first started performing, like tell me a little bit about that first performance. Do you remember it at all? And like obviously it's going to be different just by time, mm-hmm. you know, time is a thing. So how was that first time that you performed and when was it?
We were actually just talking about this earlier. Our first show was 2011.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was just a basement show that we played, and we had only been a band for a few months. And Victoria had been in bands before this, and Allie was in another band at the time.
Okay.
So it was just like, I had never been in a band before, and our original guitarist also hadn't, but we just decided to get together and jam and write a few songs. And then we, you know, all of our friends, just things that we did was go to house shows. So we were like, okay, we want to play a house show by the end of the school year. And so, we just played a house show, and I was terrified because I was in high school, and we were playing for a bunch of our friends, and like, Allie had graduated from college, Victoria was in college, and I feel like I was just really intimidated, but it was like a fun show. I mean, I think that it went well for for our first show. What do you think?
Yeah, people were into it. It was cool. I mean, we were in Western Mass, which is like a pretty small community of like people who are there a lot of times for college, or like at least that's why me and Victoria were there. And yeah, we had like our small little scene, and it was nice to be able to play in front of a community that feels like small and accessible and feel like they're affirmed what you're doing rather than, you know, growing. I can't really imagine what it would have been like to try and become a band in LA, because you're just one of so many who are doing it, whereas like being from a smaller area, I think, yeah, it just felt more accessible to like kind of like be a part of this community, play a show, and have people notice you and think what you're doing is cool. That there is such an oversaturation of it.
Do you feel like there was some sort of like, did you do anything particularly differently back then, especially because it was, of course, your first show? And at that point, you were a four piece. But was there something particular that you did that you still do now? Maybe some sort of like, I don't know. I'm always so interested in like little rituals that bands have or little things that you do. Is there anything that has almost stuck with you over these last, you know, however many years?
It's interesting because we don't have any kind of ritual that we do before we play. Maybe we're just so...
We used to take a shot with a roar when Roar was playing it. That's Victoria, by the way.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, other than that, and I feel like I don't know a lot of people, or maybe I just don't know what their ritual is, but maybe we're just that jaded that we like, we're just like setting up, ready to go.
Or
like,
you are already witches and you don't need any magic spells or magic things to happen.
Yeah, I don't have like a little stone in my pocket that I'm going to rub three times and then I'll have a fantastic set.
I mean, it's not a bad idea to incorporate a little bit of magic into what we do. I think that's actually a really good suggestion. I was going to say, if anything, when I think about who I was as like a performer back when we first started versus now, it feels like a lifetime ago. It feels like I can't even like recall how I felt in my body, because I think the ways I've tried to like grow from beyond that have been like in a direction of just like positive self-growth. Like when I first started playing in bands, like in front of people, I was very nervous and I like turned my back to the audience and like didn't want anyone to look at me, and I was very conscious of people looking at me. Whereas now when I play, I feel more present in my body than I do during most times in my day-to-day life, because I really am not focused so much on like, oh my God, he's in the crowd, he's looking at me. I mean, there are those scary times where I, you know, like lock eyes with someone and you can't like unsee them. But in general, I'm not like, that's not where my head's at. I'm not like thinking about who's looking at me. I'm thinking about how I'm playing, how I'm, you know, locking in with my band, and we're paying attention to each other more than I used to pay attention to like them or the out, you know, myself.
I feel like if there's any kind of ritual we have, it's always someone will come up to me and be like, what's the set list? And then I'll say, shit, I forgot to write it. And then I run somewhere and find like a scrap of paper or a napkin and like a pen off the ground, and then scribbled a set list for everyone. And I'm like, okay, let's go. That happens every single time.
Yeah. I feel like, but when, how do you then remove the ego when you're forced to make people like aware of who you are and what you do? Because I feel like, especially when you are first starting out, you know, like there was mention of nerves. Of course, you're going to be nervous because that, you know, performance aspect of your life is not inherently natural yet. But how do you then make sure that you're not getting up on stage and acting like a total arsehole? You know, you don't have like, how do you make sure that you are still true to yourself whilst also regaining this power, which I feel like performance is powerful. So how do you make sure that you balance those two things?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I wish I had a little bit more ego, because I feel like when I go on stage, I'm just like, why are you people here? I don't understand.
I mean, that's also kind of what makes it so real. Like I was going to say is like, look for those moment opportunities of like making a connection with the crowd. Look for those opportunities to make like a human connection so that you don't seem like this, like, so separate from the audience, you know? And I think that's what people want out of live music, right? They want to feel a connection to the thing they're seeing. And so you can create that in little ways through, you know, your banter between songs, or just I don't know. I like to, at this point, like we've played in the US a lot, and some of the same people, you know, we have fans in different cities, and it's important to, I think, connect with them and you know, stand by the merch table after you play, because without those people there, I mean, there's no show. Like, you know, we need them to do what we're doing.
But talk to me then a little bit about that interaction with your fans, because obviously I've spoken to so many artists and people in the arts and life, and everybody has completely different experiences. You know, sometimes when they're first starting out, they make sure that they're standing there by the merch. You know, merch is so important for a band. But then some other times, you know, something creepy's happened or something shitty's happened, and you're like, fuck that, I'm not gonna stand here, it's too much. Like, how much of yourselves do you give to your fans in essence?
It's a very fine line. It's a very, I'd say, sometimes difficult thing to negotiate for me personally, because I do want to seem, you know, approachable, and I do want to make those connections, because I am genuinely grateful for every single one of our fans who has, like, supported us. But, you know, especially on tour is very psychologically draining. And, you know, sometimes after we play, I don't want to have those interactions, exactly, because I want to just be able to, like, have, yeah, decompress and have my time, because that's important too. So it's honestly something I'm still trying to figure out. And I, yeah, doing my best.
I think the hardest thing for me is that I like interacting with people at shows, and in general, I'm a very in-person kind of person. Like, if I'm there with you in the room, I'm there with you. I hate being on my phone. And so, you know, I'll, like, have a really great conversation with someone at a show, and then they'll go and follow me on Instagram and start messaging me, and it just kind of, like, crosses a line in a way where sometimes it's harmless, sometimes it's creepy, but either way, it's like, I don't want to seem like I was fake at the show, because I was having a genuine conversation with someone, but then if they're crossing that boundary online and I ignore them, I don't want them to feel like, oh, she just, like, she's fake, yeah, like, she doesn't actually care about me, and it's like, well, no, I'm just
a human,
you know, have a lot of other things going on.
Yes.
And I want to say, as I was listening to Abby say that, like, it became, like, very clear to me that this is very, like, a gendered experience. I think people's expectations of us as female artists are very different than they would be if we were just some dudes playing a rock band.
Sure.
I think, you know, especially with our interactions with some of our male fans, there is an expectation that we will be, like, the nice girl and not the bitch.
Oh, my God. I know.
Like, everyone, and because that's a gender dichotomy of, like, I feel like, you know, being a woman or being a female artist, is she nice or is she a bitch? Like, it's either one or the other. And that's why it's exhausting to try and navigate, because it shouldn't be that way. And it's fandom is something I think about a lot, because it's like, you know, music fandom is so important to what we do. And, you know, you want to have people who are, like, super fans, like, that's what's going to sustain you in your career. But, like, no one ever teaches music fans, like, boundaries,
yes,
you know, there's
absolutely
no, like, there's nothing out there that's like, this is how to be a fan.
Especially now with technology, like, I feel like there used to be
barrier.
More of a barrier.
Exactly.
Yeah, when the only way you could talk to an artist is if you know, bought the meet and greet ticket, or, you know, you went to a show and maybe they would come outside of the venue afterwards. But now everything is just so accessible all the time at any hour of the day, and people just have so much more of these expectations, you know, that they want so much more from you. And yeah, it's just a different time, and people still don't really know how to deal with that kind of dynamic.
And then it's kind of up to you as a band, which is so unfair sometimes. It's up to you all to really decide on what your boundaries are. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I have no idea what my boundaries are until they are crossed. Then it's like that red light comes on, and then it's like almost like crossing over, like, electric wire. And then it's like, oh my God, okay, no, I don't like this. And sometimes, of course, I know my value and I know my worth, but I totally understand about, you know, feeling like that it's a little bit tricky, because if you're meeting somebody at a show, you know, does it give them the right then to contact you in your private messages online? Like, I'm not sure if it does. I feel like everybody should you know, and then what are you expected to feel bad if you don't respond? So I feel like it's about setting up boundaries and making sure that, like, conversation is as light as possible, unless you obviously connect with somebody, which is why you're all in music, you know, it's all about connection. But it's really tricky. I've never really thought of it, you know, in terms of like, how do you troubleshoot it? I've never really thought about like, when do you then, when, because people aren't creepy on the offset sometimes, you know, like people gradually become creepier as you go along.
I mean, yeah, that's the PA, a lot of times people know what they're doing. They know how to kind of
use
whatever thread of a relationship exists to manipulate it. And, you mm-hmm. know, oh, I've come to 3 of your shows by now. I think yes. that entitles me to a hug. It's like, no, that doesn't
exactly.
entitle you to a hug. No amount of show should ever entitle anyone to
anything.
It's frustrating.
I'm sure. And I also feel like there's something in that, what you said earlier, which I loved, which is like, you know, you don't really feel like it's so tiring to be on tour as is. And, you know, you're giving the person so much. Like sometimes I look at fans, and I am a music fan, and I know you all are probably fans as well. And sometimes you're like, you're idolizing this art and this work so much that it becomes inherent in your life that, of course, it will give you a sense that you know the person. And the truth is, none of us know each other. You know, just because I can read the lyrics that you wrote doesn't mean I know the inside outs of your brain. And I love what you said earlier about how, like, it's always this pressure on women or non-binary folks who are like much more open to people and much more able to connect, that, you know, there's that pressure of like, of course they're going to be nice. And like, niceness sometimes is tiring, you know, when you're trying to just do your job.
Yeah, it's a double bind that none of us asked for, you know, and it makes you have to work harder even mentally just to sort of like constantly be reconciling what are my boundaries? Should I feel guilty for not responding to this message? It's just all this extra mental work that, you know, seems to be part of the job by virtue of being an artist, being, you know, women, and being, you know, in this age of social media where accessibility is like
taken for granted
and everyone is like feels one degree of separation away from the next person.
So then what are you doing then actively, other than, I'm sure you feel a wonderful sense of familiarity and, you know, that familial feeling with each other? Because obviously, can you imagine being like a solo touring artist and not having that, you know, those people there who can watch your back? I feel like, do you feel like you have that safety almost in numbers with each other, that you can watch each other and make sure that...
100%. Yeah. 100%. The 3 of us plus are, you know, we have a few different touring guitarists that are always with us. We have a couple of primary ones. They're like, you know, they're all part of our family. Like Potty Mouth is a family. Our people we bring on tour to sell merch, or if we have a tour manager, like, it feels like, you know, we all look out for each other. We're at this point, me, Abby, and Victoria know each other so well. We know, we have a sense of what our individual or respective boundaries are. And we can, you know, keep those things in check. You have to look out for each other because it's not necessarily safe what we're doing, you know. Nothing really safe, but, you know, performing publicly, being in different cities every night, traveling in a van, like, we have to look out for each other. And I do think about that, if I didn't have my bandmates, or if I didn't have a friendship with my bandmates, I think tour would be lonely and really feel really scary, because you don't really, like, maybe you have like someone kind of looking out for you, but it doesn't feel like they're really, you know, part of your family or part of your immediate support network.
And I also feel like you're all on the same page, you're all going through it at the same time, so there's that level of familiarity as well. So it's not necessarily just a manager looking out for you, it's somebody who's like emotionally invested in whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Going from that, then what do you do, you know, because we're all, I also feel like there's this responsibility for female bands, you know, to talk about the issue of female bands. And like, that for me as well is so problematic, because I, as a female journalist, how I identify. I certainly don't want people to ask me, you know, to stand up and be that voice all the time. But do you feel like you've been put in a position where maybe, you know, you've seen something happen in a crowd or being a fan and something's happened? Like, how close are you to issues and how often are you expected to talk about them?
Very complicated question.
I'm sorry, my brain is a little wonky.
I definitely do think it's imperative that us and our larger like peer network of bands look out for each other and to have those be able to tip off each other on like, oh, this venue, the owner of this venue is like problematic, or like this band is like an abuser in it. Like that is something that,
It
needs to happen, because we have to, you know, if we're not talking about it with each other, how are we going to know? How is that information going to be transmitted? It's something that Get Better Records strives to do. Get Better Records is a label that my partner started 10 years ago and that our new record came out on, and I've started to help run. And, it's all about we need to look out for each other so that the ideals that we have for what our larger music community looks like can manifest themselves, in the spaces that we exist in together. So, then there's the aspect of I don't want to be constantly be held up as the voice of gender. And because of the gender composition of our band, we're still, only three people with our, unique experiences of the world. And as soon as you start using your anecdote as a universal truth, then things, that's not work, that's not a way to approach understanding life and human existence. I think it has to be a constant dialogue that we're all having with each other as people trying to work within the same work towards the same goals and their path.
And tell me a little bit about then, I know that you opened up for the Go-Go's last year, and you have the Fence Walker as well, came out of obviously writing with Go-Go's drummer Gina. So tell me a little bit about that experience I don't even know where to start. Like, just the mention of the Go-Go's is nuts. And the fact that you obviously got to open, which I feel like opening is such a magical, people really, put down opening acts and look at them as like, oh, they're smaller because they're opening. And I just feel like that is a magical sweet spot. You know, it's really amazing. Yeah.
It was a dream come true. We love the Go-Go's. It was incredible. And first time really feeling like rock stars. And I wasn't sure how we'd be received as a younger band playing for mostly an older crowd. But because people saw the arc. People are like, oh, so this is the kind of band that the Go-Go's legacy has left an impression on, it's really cool when you can have an intergenerational influence laid out like that in the lineup.
Do you all remember the very first concert that you all went to, the very first performance or at least live show, whether that was in a stadium or at school or at a house party? Do you all remember the first show you ever went to?
I always say I remember the first three, and I don't know what order they were in, but it was Hanson, Spice Girls, and Weird Al.
That is a trifecta for you. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I don't remember what my very first show was, because I think I was in eighth grade and just started. That's when I started going to house shows, and they all kind of blurred together at that point. But I did get to see, I got to see Jay Retard.
Yeah.
And and because a friend's band opened for them. And like the first huge stadium concert I ever went to was Green Day. It was Best Coast opening for Green Day. And amazing because I loved Green Day in high school. That was my first real big show that I ever went to.
I think my first show was Cher and Cyndi Lauper.
that is so amazing.
And Peter Frampton.
What? I love Peter Frampton. He's like the best dude ever. Wow. Wait, where did you see that show? When did that happen?
I don't know anything about him. My mom loved him. And I was about 10.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, honestly, he's got the best tour stories because he's just been around for so long, and like he had like weird riders, and there's just like a lot of like myths about the dude, and he's just so lovely. But that's amazing. And you saw Cher. Was that because you went with your mom, or was that because you were interested in that music?
No, but my mom also. It was the it was that tour that she did in like 2001 or around then, when that like she had her song, when she was doing auto-tune. With the auto-tune stuff. Yeah,
I was gonna mimic it, but I have no voice. But so and your mom.
I was so
Do you believe in love after love?
Oh, I love Cher, guys. Cher's like the fucking best. But and so.
Sunny Bono report in Palm Springs. Something you may not know about me.
What?
The airport in Palm Springs. I don't know if it's the airport or maybe it's just a concourse, but it's called like Sunny Bono Concourse.
Yeah.
In the airport in Palm Springs.
I have to do a share.
You know,
Sunny and Share.
Sunny and Cher. Anyway, sorry. Random.
No, not at all. I'm like right there with you. I don't find that random. That's a very important part of the conversation. That's amazing.
It's a great airport. It's small and the concourse is entirely outside. So it's also a dog park. So people have their dogs out.
What?
I've never seen dogs in an airport, or maybe I have and I just don't notice them because they're in carriers.
Yeah And they're like human-like, you know. But wait, so did your mom like when you were growing up, do you remember what your mom was listening to,
like Cher when you two came out with that album? And like I don't really remember what was on that. I love that album too. And I almost went to that concert. Yeah Stuck in a moment, I can't get out of it.
What was it about? Do you remember that performance at all? Just like the spectacle of seeing, you know, and also like, you know, Abby, you mentioned Green Day, and you're just seeing these performers live on a stage that's so gigantic. Do you remember what you felt when you saw that?
It was electrifying. Cher had like fake $1 million bills printed out with her face on it, and they dropped it from the ceiling.
Oh my God, raining Cher. That's amazing.
Meanwhile, Green Day had like a toilet paper gun, and they were shooting toilet paper to the crowd.
You can see like the two different experiences. But obviously like seeing bands when you're so young, do you feel like any of those performances taught you anything about performance? Like did you, or maybe not those first shows, but for all three of you, was there a performer that you saw that you were like, that is exactly what I want to do? That makes me feel, that it energizes me, that makes me feel everything. That's exactly what I want to do going forward. Was there that one performer?
I have to think about that because I feel like I've never, I feel like I've seen a lot of bands. Like recently, I've seen Cherry Glazer a few times in the past year. And I remember seeing them and just thinking like, well, they just look so chill and cool while they're playing, and like they're having a good time and dancing around, and I was like, I totally want to incorporate that kind of vibe into our set now, because I feel like when we play it's so just like aggressive and straightforward, and see someone else have a dynamic that's like kind of silly, I was just like, oh okay, That's cool.
Yeah, and especially, yeah, experiencing that.
Oh, I was just saying, I think it's just something I always think about when I watch bands. I'm like, oh, what are they doing? Or how are they interacting with each other? Or if this is, like, why is it boring? You know, like, I don't know. There is, like, I definitely get inspired by, it's funny because when Victoria said she, one of her first concerts was Cyndi Lauper, mm-hmm. I was thinking how I saw Cyndi Lauper, like, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. Just in the same way I, you know, seeing the Go-Go's, like, I love seeing these older women who mm-hmm. are still doing it and who are still just as cool and who sound the same. And I find that inspiring because I think, like, you know, again, like thinking about like gendered expectations and assumptions, and I think that it's just in general, like, it's not as remarkable to see like an old man rocker, yeah. but when you see like an older woman who are still fucking badass and who's the same, like, that's it's really cool.
I just had one more thought, which is that I realized when I saw Green Day play, that's when I realized that you actually have to be an athlete to be a major performer like that, because the stage was huge and they were running all over the place, running down the middle platform and jumping up in the air. And I'm just like, okay, these guys are what, like 50 or maybe
what,
they're
like
in their 40s.
100?
Like,
yeah.
45. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, I can't do that. How are they doing this right now? And that's when I realized, like, you actually have to be prepared for a performance. And like, oh, actually, a really good example of this is Turnstile.
Oh, yeah.
Their performances are just mind blowing. They go insane. And when we played Wrecking Ball in Atlanta a few years ago, they also played and we shared a green room and they were all like stretching each other out and rolling each other with tennis balls to warm up their muscles.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, they were all like working out before their set. And I was like, oh my God, like, is it really that crazy? And then we saw them and I was like, oh my God, it's that crazy. So that's what I've like, I've now seen a few bands where I'm like, okay, you actually I have to like work on my cardio to put on a performance.
Like work on my breathing in order to sustain me in this long athletic stretch. But so
it's totally real.
And watching these amazing performances, do you feel like, because of course I feel like, I mean, I just spoke to somebody an hour ago and he's been in it for decades. He's been in the industry for decades and he's still learning things every day. I don't even think, you know, ageism is a thing. Gary from Snow Patrol.
Oh, cool.
I love the idea of a band consistently learning and really shifting and changing the way that not only they perform, but the way that they, of course, make music.
Yeah.
You know, your writing is shifting, and I love your latest album. And do you feel like your performance is not only getting better, but it's changing a lot because of just experience and just how you are connecting to performance?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we started this band with such low expectations where we were just like, let's just play and see how it goes. And now, you know, we have goals for ourselves and we have a standard for our performance level. And I mean, we're always learning and adapting. And every time we write a new song, like, that, you know, you have to figure out how that is going to sound. Like, is it going to be a quiet song or is it going to be a loud song? And how is that going to change the way that people perceive your image if you now have quiet songs and you're a rock band? And, you know, we're older now than we were when we first started, or we have different hair colors, and like, you know, we're people who change just inherently. And so because of that, you know, you're constantly changing as a band and figuring out how to navigate that and like how people perceive you.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, in all areas of my life, I try to think of think of it as like there's always more to learn, and you know, there's always, you want to grow as a person. And I think what's great about music is it's not like you ever get to a point and like that's it, like you're there, you did it. Like there, either as a musician or as like you know, just like an artist that you know operates like in, you know, as a business in the world, like there's always more to do, there are always things you could be refining, like you and what you have is all of your experience to learn from. Every experience should be giving you information about what's working and what's not working. And for a type of profession that we just like fell into because we kept doing it and because it was fun for us, like, you know, we didn't, it's not like we went to college for how to be a band, you know, we didn't take a class. There's no manual on how to do it. So a lot of it has been coming from experience. So you kind of always have to reflect and be like, huh, is that working? Or like you go to shows and you see the way other people are doing it and you're like, oh, okay, so they're doing this. And like, you're just always looking for, you know, new information and reflecting on what you've done. And I think that's part of like learning to let go of like your ego. Like anyone who thinks have it figured out, that's like just a really limiting mindset. Like, you know, you need to open your mind to different ways of operating in order to you know, continue to grow. So you know, it's an interesting experience.
What do you feel then are the things, you know, Abby, you mentioned earlier something like goals, you know, that's such a powerful word that I feel like everybody just throws away. But in terms of your growth as a band, and also, of course, I think that a band doesn't work if the individuals are not growing at their own pace as well. So what do you feel, maybe, I'm just trying to work out what I'm even asking, but I think I'm wondering about what you want to do from here in terms of growth. Like what are the things that you want to achieve that you know will help yourselves and also the band as a whole?
Well, we definitely want to tour outside of the U.S. That is like the main goal right now.
Yes.
Where we're like, okay, we've toured the U.S. multiple times and we're sort of playing these bar venues over and over, and you know, we want to expand and make a name for ourselves worldwide and, you know, reach audiences that maybe have a different culture around music. Like I feel like we could be huge in Japan, and like people always tell us we have to go to the UK, and there are these things that I think really will boost our confidence as a band and just like really expand our experience and like give us, like bring us to the next level. I think that is a huge thing.
Is there a space, just before we can, is there a space or a place that you are dying to go to? Is there a particular place that you've always wanted to travel and play?
I mean, definitely Japan for me.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely Japan. I mean, like so many places. Like I can't wait because like when I was in college, I studied abroad in Amsterdam, and I'd love to go back there. I'd love to play like in Mexico and South America, Australia.
What do you feel is the necessity? Like if you could close your eyes and like act almost godlike and think of the perfect festival, like a 3-day festival with a lineup of your dreams, do you know who would play that? Like in your mind, like who would you want to be on the bill next to?
Oh, who would we want to play with?
Well, yeah, or even just go to a festival and watch that performance. Like who, you know, I know that those are two different things, but is there a band or bands that you could picture would be like the ideal of a lineup?
Well, definitely. I've seen St. Vincent a few times, and Allie and I worked at Coachella last year and she played, so we got to see her. I could see her 100 times. Her performance is always so amazing. So she's definitely up there for me of just festival, like shows that I will always want to go to.
I'm like dying to see Courtney Love perform. I just saw her announced on a festival happening in LA, and Fred Wells was playing. I remember it being like a crazy lineup, but I'm like, I just want to see her.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Badly.
Is that the, I feel like I saw that yesterday. Is that Likely, lineup? Oh my God, that looks nuts. Oh, yes.
Yeah. The B-52s.
Oh, don't even, they've just announced a tour, guys, like an hour or two ago. And hold on. I just got the B-52s announced a 40th anniversary tour.
Wait, today?
Yep. Like,
oh, that's insane.
Okay, literally a few hours ago, and I have been dying. I've just been busy, but I've been dying to look at where they're actually going. I'm actually going to open it up right now. I don't even know where they, I don't think they're coming.
Oh, that's a crazy coincidence.
I know. That's why I was like very excited to point it out. I don't know when where they'll actually be going. But anyway, have a look and see, and you may be able to see them.
Okay.
In terms of just, you know, growth and all those kinds of things, how much fun are you just having being, you know, performing these collection of songs now? And are you focused on writing consistently and making sure that you're also like exercising that part of the brain too? Like where are mm-hmm. you at the moment?
Yeah, playing these new songs has felt really good because, you know, up until now, we had played some of them, but we couldn't because people didn't know them. And so we had to play all of our old songs that people knew. And it just felt so, like, boring mm-hmm. and uninspiring to play the same songs for, like, 5 or 6 years. So it feels really exciting now to be playing the songs from the record. And it's interesting because I feel like we've learned how to change songs so that the dynamics, even if it's not the exact same on the record, it just makes it flow better in a set, and how to like keep the energy up. And there are certain things that doing it live makes me realize, like, oh, I wish we had known that when we were recording. But
right.
So that's been really interesting to just figure out those kinds of dynamics. But I've written a couple songs just in the last week, and I kind of had like a dry spell once we finished recording and we started doing a lot of press. I just, we were all working so hard to get this album out that my brain was just not in that kind of.
Sure.
But now I feel like I've had a little bit of time to rest and the songs are just, you know, coming out of nowhere. So
you're giving birth.
I know, I'm giving birth again.
But I get what you're saying about like feeling stunted. Like there's a certain time when like creativity is just not welcome and you're not in a space to let that all happen. So I'm so glad to hear that you're back at that space.
Yeah, it definitely comes in waves. I have to like let my body rest for a while.
You have to take your prenatal vitamins.
To let the baby come out. Do you feel like there is a certain town in the States that you've visited and performed at that you just really love? Is it LA?
Chicago. Chicago.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, whenever we play Chicago, because we played Lollapalooza and we played two shows with churches there. And so, and I feel like Chicago just has a really great music energy, like people come out for shows and people are just like really good audiences there. So we love playing Chicago, and playing Boston is fun because that's kind of like our home city, or the closest thing to Western Mass that's a city. And and New York is usually fun too because we have a lot of friends there.
I love that you all do interviews together, by the way. That's a massively underrated thing right now. I love that.
Why?
You do
what
that.
How else would we do it?
I mean, I have been doing this for a very long time, and mostly there's like a designated interview person, someone who like doesn't mind being asked all these crazy questions and or just spending time with strangers. So I love that. Is that a conscious thing that you all decided to do, or was that is it just because you don't know there's no other way?
We just always do it, I think, because I know personally, I always like hearing other people's responses to these questions. Like, I feel like I think about things in a very particular way from how my bandmates think about them. And I feel like I always learn something every time we do an interview all together.
Yeah, it's almost like forced reflection time with each other.
Yeah.
But we just never really thought, I mean, we're just three different people, you know, and it's just always like, oh yeah, we'll all, I mean, there are some interviews where it's like, oh, can you do that email or whatever? But for things like this, where it's more like stream of consciousness, it feels good to all be together.
This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kivel, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com. Lexi Frame for the artwork, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.